Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
I'm freezing.
Really?
Your basement's very cold.
Oh, you'll be liking this when it's plus 500 degrees in the summer.
This is true. What is it, a super El Nino or super El Nina this summer? Like England and like anybody who's going to be outside this summer over in Europe is going to just be cooking. But I haven't looked to see if it's going to affect us.
Well, you know what? That's a good thing I'm not over in Europe then.
They're talking crazy high temperatures.
Anymore, I've sort of given up on looking at weather.
Hmm. I tend not to either, but it's when it's a headline, it's like, oh, what? But then I don't read the story because I don't care.
It's as hot as the sun out there today.
There's weather every day. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. Yep. I just hope the good stuff is when I'm outside. The bad stuff is when I'm inside. That's all I'm saying. I couldn't go paddling this weekend.
Oh, no?
Nope. No, I was gonna go. But had things to do. The first, we mowed the lawn. And then that weekend, I was on a 4-day canoe trip. And the next weekend, I was on a 3-day canoe thing. And then it poured rain like nobody's business. So there was no mowing to be done. So a month later, when my grass is up to my mid-calf, I decided, because I am intelligent some days, I know when my lawn gets tall, my gas mower tends to bog down.
Oh.
I went out and bought a push mower, one of the old-timey manual push mower things to back and forth, you know.
Yeah.
The blade spinning. Yeah. Makes a cool sound, too, when you push it.
Yeah, I've got one. Don't use it.
So I mowed the front grass with it. And I said, okay, I better just check the instructions. Do not use on long grass. The whole purpose. This is why we don't read instructions, because we didn't need to know
Did it work fine on the tall grass?
No. It bogged down bad. I got the gas mower out and it only shut down 4 times. This is why we don't read instructions.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the favor for why we don't.
Why is this not working on tall grass?
Yeah.
Let me read the instructions. Do not use in tall grass. Oh.
Could have saved me $150 bucks.
Yeah.
But
I could have saved you $150 bucks too. I would have given you mine because I never use it.
I wonder. Well, I still got the box.
There you go.
Slightly used. I'd like to return it.
This doesn't work. It won't cut tall grass.
Right?
Yeah, it won't.
Sir, it says not to use it on tall grass. But you don't find that out until you open and read the instructions.
Yes, there you go.
I never saw anywhere to not use it on tall grass.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Not amused. But you know what? If you want to get up some morning or something and get some exercise.
Yes.
You can mow the front lawn with the push mower and then rip through the backyard with the gas mower sort of thing. So, yeah, we rearranged all our bird feeders.
Right on.
All that sort of stuff. So,
we had company on the weekend, so I spent a lot of time cleaning and then barbecue. And it was good, though. The weather was nice.
Yeah.
Beautiful weekend. My house is clean now.
It was an absolute beautiful weekend this weekend.
Yep.
Sun was shining. It was hot. No rain. It was cool in the evenings. And we got June bugs already. It was the end of May.
Now
they're starting to come out.
Yep.
They're like, the 1st of June, man, we're here. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
They're all over the front of our...
They start out as grubs, eat all your grass's roots, kill your lawn, and then they hatch, and then they bounce off your forehead and...
Mm-hmm. Hang onto the screen of your front door.
Yeah. Wicked buzzing sound when they open up and fly. It's like, what is wrong with that bug?
Our front tree just gets coated, and they're all flying around that tree. I don't know why, but anyway. Let's get into some of this stuff here.
Yes.
You're going away, so we're not actually recording next week.
No, we're not.
No, we're going to record two this week. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going away on your motorcycle.
Yes. Going on a motorbike trip.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Gives me a week off.
Going to Quebec. Laurentians into the foothills. Should be nice.
Should be nice.
Should be.
and you do your motorcycle trips like you do your canoe trips.
Just tell me where to be. I'll yep. show up. Exactly. Tell me what to bring.
I don't want to know what the plan is.
Yeah. See, I'm just the opposite. I want to know where we're going just so that I can disappear for a while or something and bring back something like funky. Where did you get that?
My only concern is that somebody on the trip knows where we're going because I won't know where the hotels are, the Airbnbs. That's somebody else's job.
You just follow. See those bicycles, those motorcycles up there? Yeah, I'm with them.
Yeah.
And they're trying to pull away from you going, no, he's not with us. You know where you're not going, though, is you're not going to...
Quetico.
Yeah, you're not going to Quetico. Yeah, me and my fat fingers on my show notes. Boundary Waters entering Quetico. It's the new Quetico Provincial Park.
Yes.
Cache Bay is a primary entry point into Canada's Quetico Provincial Park, wilderness counterpart to the Boundary Waters.
Mm-hmm.
Located at the northeast end of Saginaw Lake via the Gunflint Trail, it serves as a popular starting point for paddling the Falls Chain and Silver Falls. Prairie Portage is a vital and heavily used international gateway connecting the Boundary Waters Canoe Area Wilderness in the U.S. and Quetico Provincial Park in Canada, connects Sucker Lake in the Boundary Waters to Basswood Lake, functioning as both an entry point and a popular crossing point for remote wilderness travel. Because we've talked about that, like going between Boundary Waters and Quetico, yeah, back and forth sort of deal, right? Starting June 8th, the Cache Bay and Prairie Portage Ranger Stations are expected to implement a new telephone reporting system for paddlers entering Quetico Provincial Park in Canada. Visitors will be able to use the station's Wi-Fi to report their entry. They can complete the report using their own cell phone or an on-site phone. New update should simplify the process for everyone. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
For years, visitors paddling from the Boundary Waters into Quetico applied for and received a Remote Area Border Crossing Permit, an RABC, from Canada. Permit lasted for 1 year. So you go back and forth all willy-nilly for a whole year if you want it.
And we talked about this 6 months ago or so because they're getting rid of this. Now, I wonder if they're bringing in this phone system as a replacement for that permit.
Well, for the year-long one, yeah.
Yeah.
So now paddlers entering Quetico through Prairie Portage or Cache Bay will use a new telephone reporting system at these ranger stations. Both entry points are situated along the Minnesota-Canadian border. Officials at the Canadian Border Services Agency, the CBSA, said that they plan to launch telephone reporting sites at these locations on June 8th, which is like next week, Monday, if I'm not mistaken. Agency has collaborated with Parks Ontario to set up this service in order to simplify reporting and entry. Once these reporting sites are live, an announcement will be made at the agency's social media and in the CBSA directory of services. Staff will also post new signs to help visitors at the stations.
Interesting.
Making it easier, yes. Yep. Right? Because when you're on a canoe trip, the last thing you want to try to figure out.
Yeah.
I'm
crossing a border here. What do I do?
Yeah. Run! When visitors arrive at Prairie Portage or Cache Bay, they will find staff on site and Wi-Fi available. Paddlers can use their own cell phone because, you know, most people don't not have one with them.
Yeah.
Or an on-site phone to report their arrival to Quetico by calling 1-888-CANPASS. Now, I believe when we came back from Japan, we went to the CANPASS site to fill out all our stuff when we came back.
Customs and, yeah.
An officer will answer the call and ask for accepted identification, including full name, date of birth, and citizenship. Paddlers must also declare any goods they are bringing into Canada. Officer will either approve entry to Quetico or determine whether additional evaluation is necessary. Officials told us that the calls will likely last no more than 5 minutes, depending on the group size. If you got three canoes of six people, you know that six guys.
Oh, yeah, you've been in prison for how long?
Sorry, you can't enter.
And then everybody's looking at, well, four of them are going in.
You, sir, have a felony charge. You are not allowed to enter Canada. Right?
In the fall of 2024, Canadian authorities announced that they would suspend the RABC program while they reviewed and updated it. Original expiration date for existing valid permits was December 31st, 2025. The CBSA has since extended these permits until midnight on September 13th, 2026.
And as we recall, there's a lot of kickback when they start to say, hey, we're canceling this. Everybody goes, whoa. Mm-hmm. It caused a lot of upset people.
Current valid RABC permit holders can bypass the telephone check-in at the Prairie Portage and Cache Bay Ranger stations until their permits expire. Canadian officials are still considering other telephone reporting sites because, you know, everybody's going, well, what about all the rest of the places we can cross?
Mm-hmm.
We'll announce them when they update the entire system later this year. They continue to work with local businesses and property owners, as well as Indigenous, municipal, provincial, and federal government entities to identify and designate additional reporting sites. Some site owners have shown interest in being included, and officials have begun the process to set this up. And you can find more info about telephone reporting at the CBSA website. So that's pretty cool, though. They can just go there and, you know, use it, log into their Wi-Fi there on your phone and say, yeah, I'm coming into Quetico from the Boundary Waters. Here's my info, doodly-doodly-doo.
I remember us discussing this at the time when they said they're going to get rid of these permits, and it was like, well, what are you going to do? And so we didn't really know at the time, but I guess they were coming up with this system because that you have to do something when you cross over.
Right.
You just can't freely cross because there's no, you have to.
Well,
have
not with an attitude like that, you can't.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, they got to have something there that you can cross over back and forth sort of deal. So. Now, that's just people from Boundary Waters into Quetico. What if Quetico into Boundary Waters?
So, I was wondering that, too. Like, what do you do in the reverse trip?
Run!
Is there an American version of this?
I honestly don't know.
Somewhere's out there? Or
I never go that far.
Yeah.
Usually if I'm going that way, I'm passing through.
Now, we need to talk to somebody who's done this.
Right?
Hmm.
So, yeah. So, that'll be interesting to see how many places they actually have.
Yeah, because there's a lot of crossing points.
Well, you figure if you're going back over to the States because that's
you
where you're from.
Use the same phone to call the American side to say, hey, I'm crossing back.
Or they may just go, yeah, you're going. Okay, see ya.
Yeah, out. Maybe.
Get out!
But the American side usually has stronger controls.
Right.
What do you think? You'd think you'd want them to.
There's got to be some sort of shared responsibility or something.
What are you carrying that really big heavy barrel? Nothing.
Nothing. It is not filled with alcohol. You're allowed one bottle, right? Is a barrel considered a bottle?
It's one container.
It's one container of booze.
It holds 5 gallons.
Right? That'd be awesome. Oh, you got the small one, sir. Oh, why do you have it on your back like one of those camelback things the bicycle and runners wear?
The straw.
With the straw hanging on.
Makes the day go quicker.
It makes it go a lot quicker. So, I heard about Treaty 6.
Yes.
And a commemorative trip that's being done. I'm not going to get into
the details.
All the details of Treaty 6.
But just
because there's different points of view on how it what it was for when it was signed.
Yes.
150 years ago?
Yes. Exactly 150 years ago.
So to commemorate the 150th anniversary of Treaty 6, students and staff from across Lloydminster Public School Division are taking part in a meaningful learning journey that honors the history, significance, and ongoing relevance of Treaty 6. The Treaty 6 150th commemorative canoe voyage is an 8-day Voyageur canoe expedition along the North Saskatchewan River, retracing the historic 348-kilometer route between Fort Pitt and Fort Carlton.
So this is a stretch of river that runs from Saskatchewan through into Alberta, yep. And the school that's doing it is Lloydminster. Was it the high school is called Lloydminster High School. Yeah, so it affects, the treaty covers that whole area mm-hmm. between Saskatchewan and Alberta.
So as we're recording tonight on the Tuesday, they're still on the trip.
Yes.
When this airs on Thursday, they will have just finished
yeah.
the trip. Beginning May 27th, select students, representatives, and staff from Lloydminster Comprehensive High School, Avery Outreach School, E.S. Laird Middle School, Bishop Lloyd Middle School, and College Park School will collectively take part in the journey. Each school participating in designated legs of the voyage. So they've divided it up yeah. and some school will do this part, then they'll hand it over, then it'll hand it over. Lloydminster Comprehensive High School and Avery Outreach School will launch the journey from Fort Pitt. E.S. Laird Middle School will paddle through the middle portion, and Bishop Lloyd Middle School and College Park School will complete the final stretch to Fort Carlton. What a great thing to be able to do.
I know, and North Saskatchewan River, it's a pretty big river, and so I was impressed by the length of time, because the original treaty signing took twice as long as this group's trip,
right.
So they've cut the time in half. But
this is going to be something these kids
remember
forever.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
This commemorative journey follows the same waterway traveled in 1876 when dignitaries journeyed upstream from Fort Carlton to Fort Pitt as part of the negotiations that led to the signing of Treaty 6. Treaty 6 was signed at Fort Carlton, August 23rd, 1876, and later on Fort Pitt on September 9th, 1876. The voyage is intended not only as a commemoration of a significant historic milestone, but as an opportunity for reflection on the enduring importance of treaty relationships today. So it goes beyond just the Treaty 6.
Yeah.
Treaties are not simple historical documents. They are living agreements that continue to shape our responsibilities to one another. Clint Chokan, consultant of learning and instruction. Being out on the water creates space for a different kind of learning rooted in story, reflection, and connection. As treaty people, it is important that we understand both the history of these agreements and the responsibilities that continue today. I know a lot of people, when you hear, oh yeah, there was a treaty, or you're thinking, okay, that was like...
They're still...
Like 100 years ago.
They're still in effect.
But they're still in effect today. Historically, the indigenous signatories entered into the treaty as a way to share the land, maintain their sovereignty, and ensure their people's survival through peaceful coexistence. In contrast, the Canadian government viewed the treaty as a surrender of indigenous title to the land. These differing interpretations have led to long-standing disputes regarding land rights, resource sharing, and the under-implementation of treaty promises. Today, the Confederacy of Treaty 6 First Nation works to uphold the spirit, intent, and inherent rights of the treaty peoples. Like I say, you want to get into, you look up Treaty 6 and you'll find a whole
The details
bunch
are there.
You'll find all the details and take from it what you will.
I'm curious, though, why they chose to go upstream. I would have chose.
Right.
Personally, I would have chose the
other
direction.
That's why it took so long.
Why are we going upriver?
Right? So our friends over at Badger Paddle, they were given the honor of making some canoe paddles for the voyage to be given as gifts as per traditions. Woodland paddles with one side of the blades painted solid red and the other side with a couple engravings.
Nice.
Badger Paddle has them on their website, and they actually look really stunning, these paddles. Badger was told by the organizers that there are going to be two counselors in the boat the entire time whose roots can be traced back to the original signees. One is of indigenous ancestry, and the other person is related to one of the colonist families who took part in the negotiations of the treaty.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right?
Yeah.
So, Yeah, like I say, it's great for these students to get on this and learn all this. Is going to be something they can remember for years to come.
Yeah.
It's really cool that you get people that can trace their ancestry back to the original.
Yes. That's pretty
the original signing, 150 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, like I say, when you're thinking of treaties and stuff, you don't think of it really as a current thing.
You forget,
right?
You forget.
Yeah. Because it was signed so long ago, right? You don't really, it's not, I guess it's because it's not in your face all the time. Sort
exactly.
Of thing. It's not on the news.
It would depend on the community that you're in. Or,
yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I think that would have a big effect on that one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, hopefully they're having a great time. They got a couple days left. Do you want to go to Illinois? Do some kayaking along the Illinois kayaking trails?
Shawnee National Forest.
Incredible hikes are found across the state of Illinois. But there is no doubt that some of the best trails in Illinois are in the Shawnee National Forest.
Somebody sounds biased.
Not me.
No, not you. Whoever wrote this.
Located in southern Illinois, Shawnee features breathtaking landscapes like cliffs, canyons, and forests that are unique to this part of the prairie state. One of its more surprising highlights is the Cache River wetlands, included in the northernmost cypress swamp in the nation. While there are many opportunities to hike Cache River wetlands, the best way to explore is by getting out on the water on this kayaking route in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're always talking about canoe routes and stuff like that and canoe trails. Well, check out the kayak trail. If you ever if you've ever seen a Louisiana bayou, you will be surprised to find a similar environment in Illinois.
I know, right? So you think of Illinois, it's like, you know, Chicago, Illinois, it's like we're on the Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis, the big arch, yada, yada, yada. But you don't think of swampland and cypress forests.
No.
It's too far north, you think.
Yeah. You would think.
Yeah. Because we're talking Indiana, Illinois, Iowa, Wisconsin. It's its neighbors, right?
Right? Yeah, that's where John Van Berger went.
Maybe.
it disappeared in the cypress swamps. Covering more than 14,000 acres, the Cache River State Natural Area is located in and around the Shawnee National Forest. A great way to begin your trip is to stop at the Henry N. Barkhausen Cache River Wetland Center in Cypress, Illinois, to learn more about this extraordinary ecosystem. You can always Google it, too.
Yes.
The Cache River wetland stretches across 45,000 acres of protected land where ancient trees stand watch over murky cypress and tupelo swamps. Yeah, see, that's stuff you're thinking way down Kentucky.
I know. Hot areas, not...
Tupelo, Mississippi. Wetlands are home to more than 100 endangered species and were named one of only 15 wetlands of international importance.
Interesting.
Wetland trails are some of the best hikes in Illinois, but nothing compares to exploring the Cache River wetlands from the water. Lower Cache River Trail is one of the best kayaking spots in Illinois. The easy 3 to 6 mile long trail allows you to immerse yourself in the environment and appreciate its species up close. Paddlers can follow international canoe symbols and yellow stripes on trees through the serene landscape, through the cypress tupelo swamp, in canoes, kayaks, or John boats with a 10 horsepower. Wait a minute.
Wait a sec.
Yeah, you're just going to tow one of those along because when you get tired. Wetlands are home to 11 state champion trees.
Hey, what?
Yeah, the largest of their species in the state. Visitors can paddle the Lower Cache River Trail to see the state champion bald cypress tree, which has been standing there for more than 1,000 years.
No way.
Take in the singing tree frogs and birds while trying to spot eagles, river otters, and more. 1,000-year-old tree, you say?
I know. It's not something.
Well, you got to think, too, if it's protected.
Yeah.
Then, you know, like
but
trees
still,
are going to grow.
But trees in swampy water, you don't think of them as lasting that long.
Right.
Well, we're used to seeing pines, and up where we paddle, it's like pine trees and so on. And any water ingress, these things just die, and you have these forests of tall, dead trees.
Right. And anything where we usually go, they've been the really, really big trees have been taken years ago.
Yes, yes, for masts, for sailboats.
For ships and stuff like that. If you're going to go, there's some tips for visitors. If you have your own kayak or canoe, you can access the public boat launch at the Lower Cache access off Perks Road. While the trail is marked, you can pick up a water trail map at the Henry N. Barkhausen Cache River Wetland Center. They're going to get you there by hook or by crook. No kayak? No worries. Cache Bayou Outfitters is a nonprofit outfitter that offers kayak and canoe rentals, guided tours, and workshops. Let their naturalists guide you through a 2.6-mile canoe trail loop in this wild wonderland, and don't miss their seasonal full moon evening tours.
That'd be amazing.
That'd be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Going through the cypress tupelo swamps and the moonlight.
And you know what the great thing? This just occurred to me. Uh-oh. The great thing about going through a bayou cypress tupelo swamp in Illinois.
No gators?
Or snakes. These are not the danger snakes.
As far as you know.
Yeah. But yeah, there's not going to be, because it freezes up, there cannot be that many. You wouldn't have gators there, I wouldn't think. I'd have to Google it now, but
right?
I'm thinking that far up north, they're not going to be gators.
There are no gators or snakes unless your name is Derek. The Lower Cache River Trail is one of the most distinctive river activities in Illinois, with amazing scenery that you can't find anywhere else in the state, and a beginner-friendly paddle trail in Illinois. The river trail is as easy and exciting way to enjoy the Cache River wetlands. More information, visit Illinois Department of Natural Resources website and enjoy Illinois websites. So those are two, Illinois Department of Natural Resources website and the Enjoy Illinois website. So it is only a 12 and a half hour drive from here.
Only 12 and a half.
We can do that easy peasy.
Alligators are not native to Illinois.
See?
Oh, however, exotic alligators occasionally appear in Illinois waterways, most commonly abandoned or escaped illegal pets.
Oh, the exotic alligator.
There's no breeding populations, just abandoned pets. Okay.
So just random alligators.
I had to look it up.
What about snakes? Did you Google snakes?
I'll look that up there.
It's the I'm going to get Derek snake.
Are there any dangerous
snakes in Illinois? Do, 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 do. Derek's got to Google this.
Have to.
There's got to be some sort of snakes.
Illinois has 40 native snake species, but only 4 are venomous and potentially dangerous to humans. These include the copperhead, cottonmouth, timber rattlesnake, and eastern Massasauga. Bites are extremely rare and generally are not fatal if you receive prompt medical attention. There you go.
But are they hanging out in the cypress swamps?
I would think so. Like the Massasauga rattler, the eastern Massasauga.
Drop on that's you a water from snake. A tree?
Rattlesnakes tend to be in dry water. Cottonmouth water moccasin, that would be exclusive in the deep south tip of the state, around along Route 13 in swamps and wetlands.
So you might be safe to go.
Yeah, I think it's
only a 12 and a half hour drive.
The most dangerous thing in this area would probably be humans.
Mm-hmm. It's close to the Ohio River.
Yeah.
Close to where Illinois, Kentucky, and Missouri meet. Close to the confluence of the Mississippi River and Ohio River. And it's about an hour's drive from where the Ohio and Tennessee rivers meet. And, so we went through there when we went to down to Tennessee and Kentucky and Mississippi and all that. We were over at the confluence right there. So
where was the Four Corners? That's in near Tennessee or something, right?
Where's Illinois, Kentucky, and Missouri. The Four Corners are over on the other side of the country.
Oh.
Yeah, this is just Three Corners.
Okay.
So we could easily spend a week or more paddling different bodies of water if you wanted to go down there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You don't have to just do the Cypress Swamp. You could paddle the Ohio River, the Illinois, or the Mississippi River, different rivers that join into those.
Interesting.
There's a lot of paddling down there.
And no alligators.
No alligators.
That's a big point. That's the important. That's the important part.
Humpty back camels and the chimpanzees.
Hmm. Shawnee National Forest.
Yep. That'll be on the list because it's not, like I say, it's not that far, really.
Mm-hmm.
Realistically, it's a one-day drive.
Yeah. It's doable.
Right?
Totally doable.
So one day you get down there late at night.
Do the nighttime tour.
Do the nighttime tour. Get up the next morning. Go paddling for the day.
It'd be wild to... So do you know how here you go for a hike, you just walk amongst the trees?
Yep.
To be able to paddle amongst trees, willy-nilly, just...
All willy-nilly. Yeah, that'd be awesome.
It would be.
Under the full moon, cypress swamps. That'd be cool.
It would be.
Spooky, but cool.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's ghost stories.
Oh, I bet you. So you've got any canoe? You got a couple of canoe trips? No, you got one canoe trip.
I'm planning on some solo trips, but there's going to be an August family trip, of course, because I always got to get out and get off the beaten path with family, teach
right.
kids more stuff. So,
I've been looking through some of Kevin Callan's guidebooks. Of canoe routes in Ontario. But look at the Ontario's Cottage Country, the Killarney and French River book, and the Top 70 Canoe Routes of Ontario book. Just looking for something a bit different.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get stuck in the rut of hitting the same areas all the time.
Yeah, I'm in that rut. It's like there's basically three locations. Like it's going to be Algonquin Park, it's going to be Killarney, and it's going to be Temagami.
Right.
And I really need to expand my horizons.
Yeah, even if it's something like Algonquin, there's a lot of places to check out, but there comes a point where you've seen most of it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And it begins to look the same. I've been looking at some routes farther afield, some farther north. Killarney is popular on the south side.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe something in the north side of Killarney, not as many people go in that route. A lot of parks have very popular areas, and some are rarely used. I'm looking for something in the medium to rarely used sections.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of routes in Kevin's Cottage Country canoe routes book that have become very popular since he first published it way back in 1993. So, unfortunately, some of that's just too popular now.
Like, mm-hmm.
Two people.
I know when you have too many people, and the thing that gets me is like you get to a portage, you get to take out and do the portage, and it's like, oh my god, there's like 18 canoes blocking the portage, so you have to sit there and you have to wait.
Right.
It's like you guys got to organize better.
How many times have you come up to a portage and you're sitting there waiting out on the water for people to clear the portage
in Algonquin Park? Quite a few times.
Yeah. When planning trips in Ontario, I tend to split the province up into four sections. First section, I draw a line from the bottom of Georgian Bay to Ottawa. Everything south of that and up to Tobermory is first section.
Mm-hmm.
Second section is anything above that line to North Bay and across the top of Algonquin Park and to the east Algonquin Park to the east and Blind River to the west. So that midsection there is like yep. section two. Then I draw a line from Pakasaw National Park on the east side of Lake Superior, across to the Quebec border. That's the third section. And then everything that's left north of that, that's section four.
There's that line along of Georgian Bay and east-west. It's basically the line between anything south, it's a cottage.
Yep.
Anything north, it's a camp.
Yep. Yep. 100%.
Yeah. Hunt camp this, hunt camp that, and then south line is the cottage.
We're going to the cottage. In relation to reaching some of these destinations from Toronto, section one and two are easily reachable in under a day's drive. So that's why a lot of times they say, yeah, let's just go for day tripping and stuff like that, right? Most of section three is reachable with a lot of it being longer day drive, great for two people sharing the driving if it's the farther locations. I have no problems driving 12, 13 yeah. hours, no problems. Section four, you may want to schedule a couple days or do the tandem driving thing. When we were doing the tandem driving, we went up to Red Lake for the trip into Woodland Caribou with 24 hours of driving from the Toronto area. So that's doable. If you got one or two people that can, you just rotate, right? we had a minivan and we put the air mattress.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Through the middle, packed gear on each side, and then the air mattress sort of the middle. And somebody would sleep, and the other person would drive, and then we'd switch back and forth sort of deal. So 24 hours is seems like a long time, but if you do it right, it's really not.
I remember when we did our, this image flashed in my head, when we did our five Great Lakes, I guess four, in one day, and it was the, we're heading south of Sudbury, middle of the night, dark, you were sleeping, I was driving, and I can still visualize that little raccoon standing up on the middle of the line in the road with his paws in the air as I barreled down on him. I guess kind of deked around him, he woke you up, you go, what's that? I think I just hit a raccoon. And this, he was like, he kind of stood up on his back legs and looked at the car coming. It's like, ooh.
No!
I didn't feel a thump, so I think he survived.
There was no residue on my vehicle, so I can 100% say you missed him.
I could practically hear him screaming, no!
It was Ricky Raccoon. I tend to do a lot of my canoe tripping in sections 2 and 3. So I tend to do more section 2 as it contains Algonquin Park and Temagami. It's easy to reach and day paddle destinations and stuff. I'm looking at trips in section 3 right now as there's more up there that I've not been to. And I always enjoy being north of Sault Ste. Marie and east of Lake Superior, that sort of thing. So as I say, I'm going through my books right now or Kevin's books and see if I can find something that's going to be doable for a couple of trips this season. So yeah, taking those books and going through them and reading them and what the routes are like, and then you're looking to on the map. Oh well, yeah, that's a like couple hour drive. Okay, that one's 4 hour drive. That one's 7 hour drive. That's a 10 hour drive. That's at least a 20 hour drive. And you sort of, I wonder if anybody wants to go on a trip.
I want to go to Quetico.
So that's where I am right now. Is just doing some researching on stuff. I know Father's Day's coming up, and I usually have a 5 day trip on Father's Day, and I've planned nothing.
So it's, you want to get out there to the solitude, the quietness, enjoy the wherever you're camping and canoeing, but it's you also want to see something new,
right?
Experience some new campsites and some new trails, and
I've also thought about doing a very lightweight trip to cover a lot of distance.
Oh, okay,
but go so lightweight. I mean, realistically, how many changes of clothes do you need?
You don't need to change any clothes at all.
Do you need a small little chair? Do you need your Therm-a-Rest mattress?
Nope.
You're right? Like, just basic, basic.
Ultra light, super quick.
And go for like a week long.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, food is the only
Food is the only thing you don't want to go
skimpy on.
Yeah, exactly.
But they also say, you know, your sleep system. If you got a good sleep system, you don't get a good sleep.
Yeah.
You're toast.
You're pooched.
So we'll see what happens. It has to be updated. But I'm getting a lot of reading in this week. Lots of reading. The River Wye. We've talked about rivers being given personhood. Status.
What's the one I just looked up? It's in Quebec. There's a
there's one in Quebec. There's states. There was one over in Europe that have been given. So the River Wye has become the first river in the UK to be given cross-border rights, covering it from source to sea.
It sounds like they're just trying to do something different. Said, oh, not personhood. Everybody's doing personhood.
Right.
Let's do a cross-border rights.
Yeah, it seems as you go
we're going to allow this river to continue to cross the border.
Yeah, as we go through this, it starts to sound like a protection thing.
Yes. And which is all what the personhood thing is. It's they are demanding they declare that it has certain rights so that it helps them protect it, clean it up, keep it clean, prevent ingress by populations and so on. It's important because with some of these rivers, they're getting so contaminated that there's something different that we have to start doing. And this is the current different thing.
100%. The charter, which was launched in Hay-on-Wye, recognizes how important the river is for people and nature now and in the future. It's been endorsed by councils, campaigners, and environmental groups from England and Wales. The river has a right to perform its natural functions and be free from pollution, says Councillor Alyssa Swinglehurst, who signed the charter on behalf of Herefordshire Council. The Wye is 155 miles long, starts in Wales, runs through Herefordshire, Gloucestershire, and England before crossing the border again. So it leaves Wales, comes back. We hope that we've done here today will travel out into parish halls, communities, village halls, farms, and schools, says Swinglehurst, who helped create the charter. We hope this raises people's awareness that the river has the right to be respected. Imagine if the Severn did it, then the Avon, then the Thames. If every river did this, then surely the constitutional change to consider the rights of nature is at least possible. And by saying that, it's like that's where I'm sort of getting my, they're doing this to protect.
Yes.
Protect.
Exactly.
It, right?
It's not just some funky thing that's fun to do. They're, what they're trying to do is protect the river.
Yeah. The charter was launched by hundreds of supporters who walked from the Hay Festival site to the Warren, a public open space alongside the River Wye. Wye is one of the UK's most celebrated rivers, but it's become more polluted in recent years. It's been the subject of many court cases, with campaigners claiming that pollution from agricultural and sewage have led to algae blooms, starving wildlife of oxygen. Algae blooms, maybe it's just because it wasn't as widely promoted sort of thing or talked about.
Yeah.
But it's not really been a big thing on the radar till the last 10 years or so.
So it came up and then subsided, and it's returning. So originally the algae
blooms... It's like everywhere.
So originally the algae blooms were cropping up about 15, 20 years ago, and that was because of the phosphates that are in laundry detergents and certain soaps and shampoos. And so they've done away with the phosphates, and everybody goes, oh, my dishwasher doesn't do dishes like it used to. Yeah, well, phosphates did something good to clean dishes, but it also left a lot of pollutants.
Right.
So now what it is they're getting the blue-green algae, and that's something different than what phosphates would cause, but it's more dangerous than... So you got algal blooms from the old phosphates, but now it's something worse, and you can't even filter or boil it out of the water. And there's some lakes that are still at risk in Algonquin Park, for example, because of the blue-green algae.
It's protected by conservation law, but the status of the river has been downgraded to unfavorable declining by Natural England.
Mm.
New charter has been endorsed by the councils of Herefordshire, the Forest of Dean, as well as Brecon Beacons National Parks Association, and the Wye Valley National Landscape. Powys and Monmouthshire councils were also represented at the ceremony. The River Ouse in Sussex became the first in England to gain a charter, but the Wye is the first river in Wales to be covered by such a document. Herefordshire Council said the charter gives the River Wye a number of rights intended to guide the long-term protection and recovery of the river and its catchment. It's got the right to flow and perform natural functions, the right to biodiversity, the right to be free from pollution, the right to be supported by a healthy catchment, the right to regenerate, and the right to representation. Ecologist Dr. Louise Bodnor was appointed as the voice of the Wye in April 2025. Could you imagine being the one appointed to speak on behalf of a river? What do you do for a living? Well, it's like this. Somebody's got to do it.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right?
Yeah.
She was chosen by the Herefordshire Council's Wye Catchment Nutrient Management Board to speak on behalf of the river and vote on its behalf in official meetings. The role was launched to protect the river from pollution by giving it a legal, ecological voice in management decisions. At the end of the day, some people might be thinking, you know, like, it's a bit silly to be given a river rights, because I know there's people that said that about being, you know, personage and stuff like that. But it is a creative way to go about saving it ecologically.
Yes.
It's a really creative way to do it. I don't know who started this, but kudos.
So I looked into the blue-green algae from Algonquin specifically, because that's what I'm familiar with.
Yep.
So it's nutrient enrichment for phosphorus. Too many people in the park dumping whatever into the rivers and lakes. And the specific problem with those lakes on the east, southeast side of Algonquin Park is it's environment, warm temperatures, nutrient enrichment from phosphorus or from sewage, heavy human traffic, stagnant water, not enough flow. It just sits there and it doesn't flush out. And climate change, it's warmer air and temperatures and so on.
Right.
So it is the primary thing is phosphorus from soaps and laundry and sewage and so on.
Now, I remember Rice Lake. We used to go fishing there, and it is like the weediest lake ever.
Yes.
Yep. But I was told at one point that on the western shore was either a fertilizer plant or a farm that used excesses of amounts of fertilizer, and it would all leach into the lake, hence all the weeds. Hence the awesome fishing.
Problem is, if there's too much algae forms, it sucks the oxygen out of the water.
Yeah.
And it can kill off fish.
Yeah. Well, this is just weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And you need a guard on your blade, on your prop of your boat.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise you're lifting that thing way too much.
So you're feeding the weeds, making the weeds more prosperous, but I think because of the shape and size of the lake, it does get wavy, and so it stops the algae from taking hold, because there's a lot of oxygenation from storms and winds and so on, plus it kind of washes the algae away, so you just end up with like very healthy weed beds.
That's perfect. That's great. Where the fish like to hang out.
Great place for the bass.
Brent Sharp, you ever hear of him?
I've never heard that name.
Really? Honestly?
Should truly? I have?
Brent Sharp is just a summer away from achieving something only a handful of people have completed or even attempted. The Port Taranaki Site Works Coordinator is closing in on a solo kayak circumnavigation of New Zealand, an odyssey that began nearly a decade ago when he set out from New Plymouth on the first leg of a journey that will take in more than 5,600 kilometers.
Whoa, that's a lot.
All right, that's your circumnavigation.
Mm. I hadn't heard about this guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of people doing U.S. to Hawaii and across the Atlantic, across the Pacific. There's a lot of people doing these things currently, but I hadn't heard about this guy.
It seems every so often somebody, hey, they're doing this thing, and then all of a sudden there's a bunch of people, that sounds cool, and they follow the footsteps, and everybody's doing it, sort of. And then it'll die off again, right? Like, you'll get like five or six people that do the big going to Hawaii thing, and then all of a sudden it just takes a back seat. And then 20 years from now, somebody's going to do it again, and there'll be another five or six people that follow. But the circumnavigation things, and I mean, they're pretty cool to follow along.
Professionally unemployed.
There's days where I wish I need my wife to be a sugar mama.
Oh, I know, right? If only.
Having always been involved in ocean-related pastimes, Brent took up kayak fishing in his mid to late 40s, so it's never too late. Then in his 50s, he was inspired to tackle solo kayaking through the exploits of renowned Kiwi adventure kayaker Paul Caffin, who has circumnavigated New Zealand, Australia, and Great Britain, among others.
Wow.
He's a legend in the kayak world. He triggered the inspiration, and I thought, that's something I would get my teeth into, Brent says. Each summer, Brent uses his annual leave and long weekends to bite off chunks of his mission. The North Island took 3 years. This past summer, he was to have completed the last stretch of the South Island from just south of Kaikoura to Monkey Island in the Southland. However, just as COVID pandemic and a family health matter interrupted his initial legs of his South Island voyage, this summer bad weather cut into his schedule and meant he ran out of time to complete the mainland circumnavigation, finishing at Kirio Bay in the Catlins, just 140 kilometers short of his destination. See, that's the point where you call your boss and going, I picked up some bad bug. How long will it take me to paddle 140? I need 3 days off.
Exactly.
I had expected to complete the South Island this year, but the East Coast was more difficult than I had anticipated. I had some rough southerlies on the way down, which meant I was only able to paddle 50% of the days I was away, when it should have been about 70%. He says that then, however, his philosophical, he is still philosophical about coming up short. I am disappointed, but it is what it is, and there will always be there next year, which is what I say all the time. It's like, you know what? Just because you can't do it this year,
yeah,
it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Just go back and, yeah, it's going to be a pain in the arse if you got to go back, but, you know, it's better than saying you never did it and just give up on it. Throughout the whole voyage, I've never forced anything, and I don't intend to start now. It's not a race. I'm about doing it organically, not pushing it with a deadline. Next summer, he and his sport crew, his wife Sharon, will load up the camper van and head to the bottom of the South Island, where Brent will complete the South Island leg before eyeing up Stewart Island. I've decided to tack on Stewart Island. It's scary as it is most daunting piece of ocean there is, along Fiordland, and Sharon would prefer that I didn't do it, but I'm pretty determined, and I'm already planning for it. Mm-hmm. Once complete, Brent will join a small group to have kayaked around New Zealand, and at 68, will be the oldest.
There you go.
See? It's never too late, Derek. Go get a kayak. You'll be 68.
Soon.
In about 10 years or so. See? I've always wanted to challenge myself, and even at my age, I want to get as far as I can and strive to get better. He keeps fit during the off season by sweating it out at F45 high intensity circuit training classes.
There you go.
With solo kayaking, you have to really enjoy it because it's hard, but I love it. Being out in the middle of nowhere and enjoying the peace and beauty, it's right up my alley. The path least traveled and all that. Through every kilometer of his journey, Sharon is his constant support, following in the camper van, appropriately named Shazza and Sharkbait.
I assume he's the Sharkbait.
I would assume. Stopping at lookouts and beaches along the way while keeping tabs on her husband, often 12 kilometers off the coast, via a satellite tracker that pings his position to her phone. If it wasn't for her following me around, it wouldn't be as enjoyable. We're doing it for our own leisure, doing it at her own pace and in her own time, and Sharon enjoys it as she gets to see parts of New Zealand that many don't.
Yeah.
She'll stop at lookouts and get the binoculars out. There'll be people there, and they'll be chatting and ask what she's looking at, and she says, oh, that's my husband out there. Brent spends months ahead of each summer plotting out his next leg, the coastline, possible landings and distances, then laminating maps to have on hand for each day's paddle. I generally aim to paddle 7 to 9 hours a day, point to point, shortest route, so I'm usually about 2 kilometers off the coast, but that can get as far as 12 kilometers. Would you want to be 12 kilometers
out
in the ocean?
No, I wouldn't.
I try to find a place where I can come in and meet up with Sharon for the night. If the weather and conditions are against you, that can quickly turn into 11, 12 hours of paddling, and you have to have a contingency or escape plan to get onto land.
It's a rough shoreline.
There are very rough parts along there. If you start looking at some of the pictures on that of it,
yeah.
Some great, beautiful scenery, though. Some parts of the coastline, such as Fiordland, are impossible for Sharon to access, so Brent hauls his kayak up onto the beach, finds a spot of land, and pitches his tent. Depending on the weather, I can be in one spot for days, but I'm all self-contained and have enough food to last. Out on the water, Brent's a bit old school. He swears by his trusty plastic kayak and navigates with maps and compass, which, as we all know, is a dying art. I've got the roughest, heaviest kayak there is. I haven't gone down the flash carbon route, and I've got an old plastic thing. It needs to take knocks, which it has, and I've got plenty of repairs to show for it. His technology is limited to personal locator beacon, the satellite tracker, a mobile phone, and a VHF radio. However, the phone and radio are usually tucked away and not much use as I'm out of signal range most of the time. Journeying more than 5,000 kilometers on the open sea in a small kayak, there are times when Brent's calm demeanor is pushed to the limit by treacherous conditions. I've been flipped end-to-end, a forward loop, by a wave, and there have been scary moments in the rough surf coming into land, such as Karamia Bight, north of Westport, which had me shaking in my boots before I attempted the landing. The bite is known and feared for its strong currents, high swells, challenging shore breaks, and winds. Luckily, I had some really good ride coming through the waves onto the beach, but I was shaking. It was very scary. On another occasion on the far southwest of the South Island, Brent was stuck on shore in his tent for 8 days because of bad weather. Could you imagine just 8 days stuck in your tent?
So the problem is like you have to plan for it, right? To have food for that long. It's like, but how do you predict? Oh, I'm going to have a week's worth of food and head out. It's like, start rationing.
Well, he just has to be. I mean, you're going to have the weather reports too, right?
Mm-hmm.
The weather improved. I got a forecast that said it would be a variable 10 knots for light for kayaking. So I packed everything down, got out on the kayak to go around Pusiger Point for a relatively short paddle. Then out of nowhere, the wind blew up 30 knots. And with nowhere to go, I had to take it on. I managed to get through, but it was a pretty tense time. There's been lots of scary moments, but that's what it's about, right? There are also amazing encounters with wildlife. I've had orca pods come very close, schools of bluefin tuna jumping all around me, with birds everywhere. There are lots of dolphins, so common they're almost a daily event. And I love the bird life, particularly albatross. There's great bird life around Fiordland and Otago Peninsula. It's a fantastic experience. So it just goes to show you, A, like, you're not too old. B, you don't have to do your great adventure
exactly
all at once.
In smaller, chewable chunks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time.
One bite at a time. So,
that
good
sounds
for him,
very
man.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't imagine doing a forward flip in a sea kayak. Yowza.
Don't even want to imagine doing a forward flip in a kayak.
Wow. That's some pretty rough water.
Right?
To have that happen. Oy. But it sounds very exciting. I can see where the pleasure of that trip is. So his wife is chasing him around the island and stuff, or around New Zealand. So it's interesting time to spend with, in a way. And she gets to have, they both have their own private time.
Yep.
She gets to go around in the van. And I think that sounds very appealing to me.
And when you can meet up most nights and sit around a fire or something and chit-chat about the day and things you saw.
Hmm.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Unless you're stuck in a tent on a beach.
For 8 days.
8 days. It's like, I read this book 3 times now.
Right? I have to carve one more stick to waste some time. Hunt for shells.
Yeah. You'd be the urge to get back out on the water.
Right. Well, I mean, it depends. If the weather is big wind and stuff.
Yep.
But if it's rain.
Yeah.
Then you're stuck in your tent.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, wind.
Yeah.
You can still be outside wandering around.
You can find
around.
Some shelter from the wind in amongst the rocks. Whatever. So, but yeah, if it's raining, it's miserable, cold, wet, and raining. And
you're going to have the naps of a lifetime. So what did you do today? 17 naps.
17 naps.
Be awesome.
But I guess there's gear repair and reorganizing and sorting and, you know.
So that's when you bring a journal and do writing.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Just keep your mind occupied or
crossword
puzzles and Sudoku.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Hmm.
Good for him.
Yes.
So hopefully next year things will work out and he'll be able to finish that last little bit, and then do the Stewart Island, and
very cool.
Be finished.
Yeah.
Woohoo! If you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can stream or download all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.